This podcast has never had ads or sponsors, thanks to the incredible support from our Patreon community. If you want to support independent space journalism, go to patreon.com/universetoday. Can we make the Van Allen belts safe to fly through? Why not get a super gravity assist from the sun? Can we predict the next supernova in the Milky Way? And in our extended Q&A Plus edition, what's going on with the ocean rocks producing electricity at the bottom of the ocean? Answering all these questions and more in this question show. It's time for the question show. Your questions, my answers, as always, wherever you are across my channel. If a question pops in your brain, just write it down. I'll gather them up and I will answer them here. All right, let's get into the questions. Marcus Mark, can the Van Allen belts be drained of the radioactive particles? It would be a monumental undertaking. So no, the radioactive particles that are in the Van Allen belt, it's not like they're chunks of plutonium that are flying around the Earth that are radioactive. They are trapped particles that came from the sun and other places that were whipped up by the Earth's magnetic field. And so as long as the sun is still releasing particles with the solar wind, the Earth is going to gather them up and whip them around into these belts. It's only if you destroyed the sun would you stop the Van Allen belts from being radioactive. And I don't think you want to destroy the sun, do you? Sean, why can't we get a mega gravity assist from the sun to send things out of the solar system? It's a huge gravity well. You can get a gravitational assist from the sun. You just have to fall down towards the sun. Well, you have to fire your rocket. You have to use propellant to put you into a trajectory that brings you incredibly close to the sun. And just when you're at the closest point of the sun, you fire your engines. And this multiplies your velocity at the other end of your trajectory. And so if you want to get as fast as you can leaving the solar system using the sun, this is the maneuver. It's called the Olberth maneuver. And it sort of like, just sort of like the way the orbits work. If you fire your engines as you're at that closest point, then that amount of acceleration gets multiplied further down. And that's considered the fastest way to be able to leave the solar system. It's the technique that's been proposed to try to get out to the solar gravitational lens, which is, you know, 500 plus astronomical units away from the sun. You need to be able to go fast to get out there. And so they probably will use an Olberth maneuver to be able to do that. Mid-Atlantic River Rat. With all the unexplained or hard to explain cosmological discoveries from James Webb, do you think that we're at a turning point in that field, an entirely new point of view? No, I don't think that we have, you know, that astronomers have found anything with James Webb that is overturning their current idea of cosmology. There's been some really interesting discoveries that galaxies seem to be surprisingly mature early on in the universe. That's cool, but still within the current cosmological models. So, it's more about getting confirmation that they're actually seeing these things happen, as well as nothing really overturning any ideas in exoplanets. You know, it's like people assume that they would detect the presence of methane and carbon dioxide and water vapor in the atmospheres of exoplanets, and now they're actually doing it. No, I can't think of any major discoveries from James Webb that have completely overturned. Like, we've gotten some answers, which is great, right? Like, there have been a bunch of longstanding questions that astronomers have had about what is the source of certain forms of radiation early on in the universe. And we're actually getting answers to those questions, but nothing that's made astronomers go, well, you know, time to come up with new theories about the universe. Abdullah Hussein, next supernova in the Milky Way. We have no idea. You know, there are some stars that appear that they are ready to go supernova, but we don't know the science well enough to be able to pin down exactly when it's going to happen. So we know that there's a Wolf-Rayet star 104 that's going to go off. There's Itacarinae, which is a big star that's going to go off. Betelgeuse is in the final stages. There are hundreds of thousands of stars that have been identified that are in a stage where they're likely to go supernova at some point in the next few million years. But we don't know which ones are going to happen when. So we just have to wait. On average, a star goes supernova in the Milky Way once every 100 years, once a century. But we're kind of overdue. We haven't seen a supernova in the Milky Way for about 400 years now. And so we're overdue for our supernova. Jason Darkholm, with the discovery of water ice in another system, how much does that increase the chances for life in that system? I mean, the discovery by James Webb of water ice, and specifically crystalline water ice, in another exoplanetary system is great, but it was sort of expected, right? Like, it would be a surprise if it wasn't found. It's assumed, based on the amount of water that there is here in the solar system, the amount of water that's seen out there across the universe, astronomers have detected the presence of water vapor in the atmosphere of various exoplanets. Like, we know the water is out there. But it's another thing to actually detect it and find out exactly where in the planetary system it is and in which concentrations and how it seems to be clustered and, you know, in what forms and stages that it takes. And then you'll look at 10 other systems and find other examples and you'll compare. And then that'll teach you a whole bunch about the evolution of these planetary systems. You look at them at different ages and that'll tell you how water formed at different times. And then you can think about how we have it here in the solar system. And that gives us a comparison. Like, there's a lot of science to be done, but it doesn't change the likelihood of life in that specific system, because they didn't detect the presence of water in the inner part of the system, which is what you would expect. If you pointed a big telescope at the solar system, you wouldn't detect the presence of water pretty much inside the orbit of Jupiter. You would detect some water at Jupiter, but then you wouldn't detect it any closer than that. And really, you wouldn't detect water at a large scale until you were starting to look at the Kuiper Belt. That's where you would see it. So it was sort of expected, but great to actually see it. Lee Taylor, what are you most excited about at the moment? Vera Rubin Telescope. We are just a couple of months away from first light, and then this thing goes into operation, and then we are just going to get deluged, and they're going to find Planet Nine, and they're going to find millions of asteroids, and they're going to find millions of supernovae, and then they're going to find things that we didn't even know the universe was doing. That's the part that I'm most excited about, is some astronomer is going to release a thing which is like, here's a new thing that the universe does that nobody ever realized. That. I'm excited about that. It's time to shout out all the new $5 patrons and above. Terry, D's Nuts, K-Fly, Gunner, Rich Stock, Enzo Morvan, Brian Landahl, Whirly Gig, Zane Atkins, and Taylor. Join the club at patreon.com/universe today. E-Mindsleek. If EMF waves decay over time, losing energy and redshifting, what is the maximum wavelength possible or recorded? Photons don't lose, they don't decay, and they don't lose energy. It's just that the universe is expanding under them. And so that is causing their wavelengths to get longer. And there is no maximum wavelength. Now, what is the maximum wavelength recorded? You know, it depends on what was the starting wavelength of the photon. You can have radio waves that were given off in the early universe. They're going to be like a meter long. Like, you're going to be a couple of meters long. Like, they're going to be very long wavelengths. But theoretically, you could have wavelengths be light years long. There's no limit. Just you just have to wait long enough for the wavelengths to be redshifted far enough. Pewter Hacker, what are your thoughts on driving engagement versus setting the record straight? Can journalistic integrity survive in the age of clicks and algorithms? So I am not interested in driving engagement on my channel at all, and suffer because of it. Which is that, you know, the poorest performing parts of the channel, the thing that is dragging this channel down, is the fact that I do interviews. YouTube will tell you what are the popular videos on your channel, and they're always the Space Bites, you know, the top three of the last 10 are going to be the last 2 weeks of Space Bites. Then the question shows kind of show up in the middle. And then the interviews are the worst performing part of the channel. But the interviews are the journalism, right? The interviews are your vegetables, unless you really love vegetables. But where I am going directly to the researcher who's doing the work, who is looking for life on Mars, who is building nanoscale solar laser sails, who is, and instead of me trying to give an answer to what their work is, I am just asking them directly. And, you know, a lot of times when I interview the patrons, they tell me, like, the thing I hear is, your interviews are the best. Like, the interviews are my favorite part of this channel. Everything else is fine, but the interviews are the thing that you do that nobody else does, that is completely cutting edge, talking directly to the researchers and the astronauts and the astronomers and the engineers who are doing this work. And that's the service that I provide. You know, like, I would gladly give up every other part but the interviews, if I had to, right? You know, if you guys were sick of Space Bites, if you guys were sick of the question shows, but I would do the interviews if nobody watched my channel, because I think they're that important. And it runs counter. Like, they bomb and they don't get any kind of traffic. And in fact, YouTube makes it really clear to you that if you're going to put out videos on your channel that are going to underperform, it's going to drag down the entire channel. And I just don't care. And I think that, you know, this whole idea of driving clicks and engagement is very dangerous for people who create content, because you get trapped as a content creator. You can get trapped, you know, I always sort of give the example of the Minecraft creators who get trapped making Minecraft videos when they just don't care about Minecraft anymore. And yet that's how they make their money. That's what their audience is expecting. So they make Minecraft videos and they just are sick of it, but they're trapped. And I would much rather just focus on the stuff that I find intellectually satisfying, that fulfills my curiosity, and not think about what this is going to do to my audience and my traffic and any of that. And I think that's, you know, for me, I'm very lucky. You know, I've been doing this long enough and have found enough of a ragtag collection of people who are interested in the kind of content that we produce, the kind of journalism that we do, that I've been able to make a business of it. And it's a sustainable business. And thanks to all the patrons, I don't have to even use advertising anymore. And that's great. But I don't think people, you know, it's very rare. I don't think most people are in a position where they can have that level of sort of disconnection from what the algorithms are trying to force them to do. And it's really sad, because I think you see these burnout videos where someone says, like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore, right? Well, I'll never make that video. I'll make the video because, like, I'm done, because I literally physically am no longer capable of doing the videos anymore, doing my work anymore, because I'm, like, I'm old, right? I'm retired. That'll be where I'm going to be done. But I'm as enthusiastic and excited and creatively fulfilled and wake up every day excited to do my work as I was 26 years ago, right? Like, there's been no point where I've been like, oh, I just don't want to do this anymore. No way. I'm still having super fun. So the problem is that you have to, as a content creator, you have to make this decision, right? Do you want to amass traffic? Do you want to make money? Or do you want to remain creatively fulfilled? And for me, I want to be creatively fulfilled, and damn the consequences, right? And the other thing that I get from people when they interview me, or when I interview them, is that they like that it's positive, that, you know, I'm not here farming outrage. I'm telling them the good news about the universe, about the interesting things that humanity is discovering and accomplishing, and that there is this future that we're moving towards that is exciting and fascinating. And that, you know, all you have to do is just tell those stories, right? You don't have to go after the stories that are going to farm clicks and make people outraged. You can just, you know, because in fact, most news is good news. It's just that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And so that's the trap that journalists get caught into. And I've never been interested. Like, I just have not wanted to do that. And fortunately, I don't have to. So, you know, that's someone else's problem. Did you know that you can watch the same video with no ads and get a bonus question over on Patreon completely for free? We call it Q&A Plus. And this week's bonus question, can we get electricity from those rocks at the bottom of the ocean? And I'll put a link in the show notes. All right, those are all the questions that we had this week. Thank you, everyone, who put your questions into the YouTube comments, as well as everybody who joined me for the live show. Now, we record the live show every Monday at 5 p.m., but somewhere in the world. And so it rotates between North America, between Europe, and between Asia time. So you're going to have to check where the next event is going to be and find out if that lines up for you. Now, I'm going to talk about some more media that I am enjoying right now. But first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kingston, Andrew Gross, Bradley Groofing, Brian Bodie, Kerdwin, Chuck Hawkins, Commander Bialuk, Cy Nielsen, David Gilton, and David Mass, Dustin Cable, Evan Pro, Greg Feely, Hans Schultz, Hudson Ward, Jay Graves, James Clark, Jeremy Madden, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Marcel Smiths, Michael Purcell, Mazzo, Paul Rohrbach, Rank Haidu, Robeck, Sean Sargent, Stephen Fallon Munley, Vlad Chiplin, and Wolfgang Klotz, who support us at the Master of the Universe level. And all our patrons, all your support means the universe to us. So I've got a couple of pieces of media to recommend to you. The first is a movie that finally made it onto the streaming services, and that is Mickey 17. This is a movie from Bong Joon-ho, and you know, you might be familiar with his work with Parasite, and there's a lot of other movies that he's done, horror movies, Snowpiercer. And this one is similarly weird and great. And it's about an expedition to another planet where one of the people of the crew is expendable. His job is to die and then be reborn every time so that they can, test out pathogens and things like that. And what happens when he accidentally doesn't die? It's good. I mean, it's definitely not a hard science fiction movie, but it sort of brings up some interesting ideas on a lot of the kinds of issues that the director has been exploring in many of his movies. And so if you're kind of into that kind of thing, I think you'll really enjoy it. So then second thing that I'm going to point you at is an anime on Netflix called Feyrun. And the gist of it is that it's like an adventuring party from Dungeons and Dragons, you know, kind of thing. And there is a elf who is long lived, effectively immortal. And she watches the death of old age of all of her companions returning and sort of seeing how the world evolves as she lives forever. And it's kind of sad, but it's kind of beautiful. And it's really well done. So definitely, you know, check that out. All right. Keep your recommendations for media coming at me, and we will see all of you next time.